Welcome to the 599 Sports Show, powered by Texas Podcast Media. Now here's your host, Craig Irwin, Toby Tullis, and Trent Hart. And good evening. Welcome to the 599 Sports Show. Craig Irwin, Trent Hart, Alex Aldrum in the swamp box with us tonight here on the 599 Sports Show. Craig Irwin in the Randy's Rubs hot box. Trent Hart in the Porter's Processing swamp box. Alex Aldrum hanging out down there in Anahuac, Texas, too. How are y'all doing, guys?
We're here. We're here at the stage. We're here at the prenumptuous episode of the 599 Sports Show podcast. We've got this episode and our state championship reaction show to go, and then a little break.
A little break. Yeah. Still going to be a lot to talk about, because behind state championships, what comes next is the coaching carousel, right? To be able to go through all of that and a couple coaching jobs that's open, Cleveland being one of them, Livingston being another, and then Lufkin has opened up as well. So just right up and down 59, there's three jobs that have come available here since the football season has slowed down for a lot of these schools. I say slowed down, shut down. You know what I mean? Y'all there, guys?
Yeah, those are some pretty interesting gigs. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. I got through talking, didn't hear anybody. I thought, did we drop everything? You know what I mean?
A little lag going on.
Okay. Well, I just closed out a couple windows on my computer, so that ought to help with the lagination going on, as long as I can keep Case off of what is that, Amazon TV or whatever it is when he's down there trying to stream on the his cartoons. So you know how that is. But yeah, so some coaching.
Now that Lufkin job is going to be a pretty sought after gig, I would imagine. You could see coaches from Houston, Dallas, even the Austin area leave to take that type of job. So it will be interesting to see who comes up there.
No, I agree. A lot of good athletes come through Lufkin ISD. And, you know, Lufkin's that they're out in the middle of no man's land. No matter where they're at, what district they're in, they got to travel. They got a lot of traveling on their hands and dealt with that once again this year. But it was going south versus going north up to the Dallas area each and every week to play, or every other week to play. They were able to go south this year, so big difference for them, but definitely a well-sought-after program to be a part of. You know, we talk about Lufkin ISD, and I've done numerous games over there at Abe Martin Stadium. They've done a lot of upgrades around there as far as for their basketball. They got a huge indoor football facility that I got to go tour at back in 2010, 2011, when Cold Spring was making some big runs. They would go up there. LaTanya Goffney was the superintendent at Lufkin ISD at the time, and she was an alumni of Cold Spring, and she got the superintendent job up there in Lufkin coming out of Cold Spring. She went up there, and then now she is the superintendent there at Aldine ISD. But nonetheless, not very nice place. The football stadium, Abe Martin Stadium, needs some upgrades. At one time, it was one of the premier high school football stadiums in East Texas, and but now in today's times, it needs to be re-turfed, and press box needs to be revamped for sure. So
there is definitely some lag going on, but nevertheless, I mean we getting into the state championships now, though. I mean, we're here.
We are here. And you know, guys, we got the opportunity to get in the box up there at Randall Reed Stadium Friday night and do a game, all three of us together. And Alex had the call there with that Kilgore-Lavernia game. And Kilgore didn't disappoint, in my opinion. Held true to Their average of 12 points per game. The weather was a factor, I felt like, through the first half, and really let Kilgore, the second half, let Kilgore really kind of open up and play their kind of football.
Well, I mean, they were dealing with, you know, they were dealing with the weather. Obviously, the wind was whipping around down there, and it was a steady misting type of rain. It wasn't super hard, but it was enough to make some disruption. I think, like you said in our post game, that, you know, Kilgore didn't really do the type of play that they wanted to in that first half, and then turn around in the second half when the weather kind of lit up a little bit, kind of were able to open things up. But it was the defense, I think, that I was most impressed with out of anything when it came to Kilgore. Their ability to show different looks up front, and you know 3, 4, and 5 man fronts, and then holding Lavernia's run game to, you know, practically nothing throughout the entire game. I mean, I say nothing. They think they still had just under 100 yards of rushing with their number one running back and their quarterback. But nonetheless, the Kilgore Bulldogs were very impressive defensively, and I'm going to be very interested to see how they can handle this high-powered Salina offense.
Well, what's going to be fun to see is that front seven from Kilgore take on the Salina offensive line, because in watching Salina, man, I tell you what, they were creating some holes, and Lavernia had, you know, some pretty good beef up on their offensive line. Salina, I think, has even more. So Salina, of course, being one of those programs that continuously makes pretty good runs, again, back there. And that is it. That's going to be one of the more fun games to watch coming up this week.
You know, the interesting thing about that Kilgore, whenever I go back and I look at the notes that Trent put together for the broadcast the other night there on the NFHS network. And if you missed it, go to NFHS.com and you should be able to go back and watch that. Just an excellent broadcast put together by Anahuac Sports Live. But the presentation aspect of it, the announcers were even better, if I must say so myself, Alex. But Trent put together some great, was able to pick up stats and put together some good notes for us. But you go back and we looked at the stats that Trent had put together. They had LaPerrion Graves talking about him having 136 tackles, 7 tackles for a loss, 2 sacks. Junior Ja'Kalen Sheffield, 112 tackles. LaKeyshawn Graves, 111 tackles, just a junior. Wiley Mitchell, number 30, 88 tackles, 9 tackles for a loss. And Cameron Christian, 86 tackles, 4 tackles for a loss. What the front four did all night long, especially in the second half for Kilgore, wrecking havoc on the size of that offensive line. That we called Cameron Christensen's name several times throughout the night. He's probably up to 100 tackles, but they were just absolutely dominant and had their way in the trenches.
No, you're 100% right. That the high-powered running game from Lavernia never got off the ground. You know, they had a couple of plays there towards the end of the first half, and then in the second half, it was, you know, in garbage time when the game was already set. You know, kind of keying back on the point that you made about the weather, I definitely do believe that had a key, and especially in the first half, Kilgore was not able to get their air game going. And then you could tell when the second half began, the drizzle had pretty much come to a stop, that the balls weren't going off the receiver's hands. They were through the fingertips. They were able to catch it and make some pretty good plays.
Well, and Kilgore made adjustments there in the second half with the pass plays that they were running. They were just little timing passes just right there to the outside and able to, little screens, and was able to get upfield and for positive yards. And that was a big thing for Kilgore and what they was able to do on the defensive ball, defensive side, though. Lavernia was trying to stay true to their ground and pound and control the clock and we talked about it in the halftime show of that game, you know, Kilgore only had the ball for a total of about 5 minutes in the first half. The rest of the time, it was Lavernia who had the ball. It was just Kilgore had scored so fast early on and capitalized. And let's not forget about Kilgore on Lavernia's opening drive, forced them to a three and out in a high snap, got the ball back on the 9 yard line of Lavernia, and which resulted into a field goal for Kilgore. But just talking about
the tone,
it did
for the entire game.
It really did.
And you know, they took advantage of it, but they held them to a field goal on that, which I thought was a win for Lavernia's defense. And you know, they played hard. Lavernia's defense did, but they just could not, you know, they could not really, with the weather the way it was and everything. I mean, they stopped them on a few key drives and stuff like that, but they just really couldn't pull it all together. And like you said, the offense had time of possession. Lavernia's did for most of that football game, but it kind of worked to their disadvantage, especially when we got into the later half.
No, it did. It did work against them, as they weren't able to. And it wasn't until the second half before they were they made some big plays, you know, kind of set the tempo. Excuse me. I think it was late in the first quarter. They went for the fake punt and had a big play there. And then behind that, their next possession, they ended up scoring. But that was in the first half. Second half, they just never got that mojo going.
No, they couldn't. I mean, because Kilgore made the adjustments that they needed to. Because I think the Kilgore defensive coaching staff saw that Lavernia was starting to have some success running outside of the tackles. And they made that adjustment coming out in the second half. And given, like I said earlier, like given those different looks, and they just had Lavernia's offense had no answer for it because they were being stuffed almost every single play.
And then on the other side of that, Lavernia's offense, their quarterback, Keegan Hayek, he did not, I don't think he completed one pass, did he, Alex? I don't know if you still have your stats or if they're readily available from that game, but I don't think that quarterback for Lavernia had a completion.
No, he was 0 for 7 with an interception.
Yeah. So the one completion he had went against him, right?
They relied more on him throughout the season for his legs,
yeah,
rather than his passing ability, right? He busted out a couple of 10-plus yarders here and there, but he really couldn't get going either.
Yeah, he had, going into that game, 98 carries for 738 yards and 9 touchdowns. So, and he was a straight north and south runner. He had no shiftiness to him. He just tucked the ball and ran, catch me if you can. And, you know, that's at the end of the day, that's what it was. But fun football game to call overall. Seeing two teams that we don't see, being able to talk about them, learn about them, that was a big thing. So I really enjoyed that. And then, of course, obviously me being able to do the game, you know, there with Alex and yourself, Trent, it was made for a lot of fun.
You know what else I want to touch on for that particular game? As much as I'm sure the three of us have seen some games with questionable refereeing this year, they were a complete non-factor in the ball game, and I thought that was probably the best officiated game that I had seen this year.
I agree, and we should – At a state semifinal game, that's the kind of officiating we should see, right?
Correct.
I believe there was only 3 penalties all game long. Am I correct, Alex?
Four. There's 2 on each.
Okay. One of them was a personal foul against Kilgore.
Kilgore had 2 personal fouls, and then Lavernia had a false start and an offside.
Yeah, defensive offside. So, yeah, very, very clean game and well officiated. I mean, you didn't have officials meeting up, spending, you know, what seems like an hour, but honestly, it's 30 to 45 seconds talking about it, make sure they get the call right. Credit that officiating staff, most definitely. They were spot on. They were out of the Houston chapter. And with saying that, I'm going to call these guys out, let them know. Let's see, we had Tony Barcelona. He was the head referee. Paris DeWall was the umpire. Then we had Jaime Ramirez, Tim Woods, Steve Jones, Ryan Middleton, and Mark Smith. They did a great job in that football
game. No, they really did. They really did do a good job. And, I mean, at this point in the playoffs, I mean, you expect teams to be disciplined, right, when it comes to the penalties. And I think both were. I mean, it says for itself only four total and two for each. So, but, I mean, aside from the personal fouls, I mean, it was getting a little, you know, hairy on some extracurricular a little bit. But with the emotions that are going into this game so high, I mean, you expect to see a little scuffles here and there. It's football, right? So, but they did an excellent job getting in the mix of that, breaking it up real quick and calling a really clean game overall. So, yeah, definitely credit to that officiating crew.
Big credit to them. And then, of course, Saturday we roll into all the big schools football, and we're going to talk about it after the break. No DeSoto, no Duncanville, no North Shore in the state championships. We're going to have that and a lot more here on the 590 Sports Show. We're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
Howdy, folks. Randy here. At Randy's Rubs, it is our mission to bring you a variety of mouthwatering seasonings that are sure to make the ordinary extraordinary, to make the impossible possible. Creating memories with friends and family is what is most important to us, and we hope to be the cornerstone of your meals, making memories with the ones you love most. As all of you continue on your fall sports journey, Randy's Rubs wishes each of you an incredible season, and may each of you be an All-American. Go check us out on Amazon or at randysrubs.com. It don't suck, y'all.
Bullfrog Environmental has 16 years of erosion control experience. From silt fence to construction entrances, we specialize in it all. Give us a call at 936-672-3744 or leap over and visit us on the web at bullfrogenvironmental.com. And welcome back to the 590 Sports Show. Craig Irwin, Trent Hart, Alex Altram, all here powered by Texas Podcast Media. Trent and Alex over there in the Porter's Processing Swamp Box. Don't forget our good friends over there at Porter's Processing. It's that time of year. It's deer season, duck season. I don't know too many people that get duck processed, but I know a lot of people that get hogs while they're out at the deer lease and or have them a few deer. Go down there and see our good friends Casey and his staff there at Porter's Processing. They'll get you fixed up, and we got all their information posted on our commercials. So be sure to go see them. And then once you go pick that up, Craig Irwin here in the Randy's Rubs Hot Box. It don't suck, y'all. I promise you, you won't be disappointed once you get some of that Randy's Rubs. He's got four different seasonings out. This is it. 13-0, Get the Net, and Spirit Sprinkles. I haven't found anything that it doesn't work on good. Matter of fact, Christmas Eve, I'll have all the kids here at the house, and we are going to do a pork loin, and I'm going to smoke it, and I'm going to season it up with some of those Randy's Rub seasoning. So it's going to be really, really good. So go see our good friends, www.randysrubs.com, or you can find them on Amazon. Promise you won't be disappointed. But when we went to the break there a while ago, guys, we were talking about this year, 2024, no DeSoto, no Duncanville, no North Shore. And it's been a while since we've been able to talk about that, but we're going to talk about that and some more. But we're going to start down at the 1A Division II level, guys. And you got Jayton versus Oakwood, December 18th. That's 11 a.m. kickoff down there at Jerry's World. Six-man football.
We said it last year. If y'all haven't, y'all listening out there, and y'all haven't watched six-man games, I mean, this is the time to do it, right? Yes. I think these games are going to be carried on NFHS Network, and I think they're also going to be carried, was it Fox Southwest?
Fox Sports Southwest, yeah. They'll be over there, too.
Okay, so if y'all I know most people are at work on a Wednesday at 11 o'clock in the morning, but if you get a chance to watch some six-man football and the crazy scoring that goes on in these football games, do it.
Yes, it's going to be a lot of fun. Trent knows more about that six-man stuff because he played six-man whenever he was in junior high. So
I didn't play six-man. I was just around it a lot growing up.
Up there in that part of the country where Trent grew up, six-man was a big thing, and outside of where he was. And it really is. It's neat. I'm watching some of the highlights on one of these websites, six man. It's an 80-yard field, a little bit different, or a whole lot different. And, I mean, you got 12 guys on the field playing football. So, Oakwood, averaging 49.8 points per game. Jayton, 65.5 points per game. So, between the two, Oakwood, 9-5 on the season. Jayton, 14-0. So, they're perfect. And that's about as far as I got. No common opponents for these two football teams. And so no stats to go off of. I would be curious to see what stats for this six-man football, what it really looks like, yards per game and all that good stuff. But
well, it's probably crazy numbers just like their scores are. But Oakwood, with one title game appearance, I think that came back in 1991. They've had 15 playoff appearances. So, I mean, they haven't been to this level all that much. Jayton, on the other hand, if I can get back over there to it, has four title game appearances, two state titles coming in 84 and 85. I talked about it last week that, you know, those two coming when my uncle was coaching there, Phil Mitchell coming from May, where my grandfather coached. And it was, ironically enough, ended up being his father-in-law. And May was actually the ones that they beat in 1984 as my grandfather was coaching that team. Wow. So some tidbit there.
A little family history. And for those of y'all that don't know, Trent has a brother that's a coach. And so Trent, I guess, for somehow, some way, ended up bypassing the coaching era. And got into broadcasting. So
it's my little contribution to the, I guess you could say, family business.
The family.
There's a long history there as far as the coaching goes, and there's, you know, extended family too. But it's definitely cool to throw those kind of, you know, stats and history out there.
Yeah, to be able to go through the heirloom of what it is and the family tradition. Steve Gramilio, he commented there on the Facebook live feed, and he's on that Columbus horse. We're going to talk about Columbus here in just a little bit, Steve, so stay tuned here on the 590 Sports Show on Facebook Live. So moving up into 1A Division 1, Whiteface versus Gordon. Trent, give us the tell of the tape on these two.
Well, Gordon, averaging, they're the defending state champions, right? And they're averaging 57 points a game to Whiteface's 67 points per game. Gordon 14-0, Whiteface 14-0. This is going to be a good matchup, I think. Overall, I mean, that's, you know, you think Gordon with the coming back, they've got a lot of experience here.
Yeah,
and I should be bringing up their stuff as well while we're waiting. But go right ahead.
Yeah, so basically both teams 14-0, no stats to run by on both of these. One common opponent between the two, Gordon beat Follett 53-8. Whiteface beat Follett 62. Let me get it pulled up. I don't know why it won't. 60-12. So both of them defensively held Follett to minimal points, but yet Gordon was able to hold them to less. Both of these games, Gordon and Whiteface traveled to Follett to play those games. One was in August, first game of the season for Whiteface, and then Gordon traveled to Follett in October, and which was probably a district game, if I was willing to bet, that time of year, and with a 53-8 victory over them. So very comparable stats, you know, as far as record-wise, I guess you could say, between these two. And the point spread, basically, is where I was going with it, with the 60-12 versus 53-8, still roughly giving up about the same amount of points. So, once again, Gordon 14-0, Whiteface 14-0. Trent, what's their history as far as the playoffs?
So, Whiteface, they have only 7 playoff appearances and 0 title game appearances as well. So, that's it's kind of new to them. They're on a, you know, a historic run for their school, being it the first time that they've made it to the state level. Gordon, on the other hand, has had two state title game appearances and two state titles to their credit. So both times that they've been there, they've won it. and they have 26 playoff appearances. Like I said, Gordon is used to this show.
Yeah, nothing new to these guys as they're there. So moving up into 2A Division One, Munster versus Shiner. Munster defeated Groover last week, 49-26. Shiner defeated Breedmont, 41-33. And I've talked about Breedmont a pretty good bit. I've seen them there at this 2A Division Two level. Really good football team. Good run for them. Look for them to be back next year as they're returning a lot on the defensive side of the ball. Breedmont is. Shiner gets the win, 41-33. These two teams will square off. It'll be the matinee game, 7 p.m. kickoff Wednesday night. They're at Jerry's World in Dallas. Shiner has allowed 179 points on this season to Munster's 231. Shiner, though, averaging 37.6 points per game to Munster's 50.3 points per game. You go down and you look at their rushing yards, Munster 249 to Shiner's 240. Here's a big deal, and I don't know if these passing yards per game for Munster, 200 passing yards per game and a total of 449 yards offense on average to Shiner's 305. So kind of give you a rundown of where they are. You look at the leading rushers for Munster, Casey Carney, 96.4 yards per game to Quincy Jones, 74.2 on the ground. Casey Carney as well, and I think I talked about this last week with Munster as well. Casey Carney, passing 199 yards per game. And then Carson Scholett, 69.7 yards per game on the passing aspect of it. So going to be a good football game at the 2A level. Looking forward to this one. It's a game that I'm hoping to be able to be tuned into here in my living room versus watching the six-man games on the computer screen at work.
Oh, definitely that's a game that we're going to get to our pick'ems at the end.
Yes.
I got to hold my tongue.
Yes, hold your tongue. We'll go through the pick'ems at the end of this.
But Munster, one title game appearance, one state title. So the one time that they went, they won it. 29 playoff appearances, 30 if you count this year. Shiner has 6 title game appearances, 4 championships to their credit, and 41 playoff appearances.
Going to be an interesting. I'm curious to not only my pick, your picks, but I'm also curious to Alex's picks as well through all of this. I'm stoked about this week. I wish that I had the availability to take off Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday and just camp out up there in Jerry's World. Moving into 2A Division One. Grenado defeated Joaquin this last week. Joaquin was that last floating 4 seed in the playoffs. And we talked about early on in talking playoffs about the 4 teams set up and how we kind of felt about it. But Joaquin proved us a 4 seed is capable to make big runs, and they made it to the state semifinal. They fall short to Grenado, 35-14. On the other side of the table, Stanford versus Hamilton. Stanford wins that one 28-13. And so we're looking at a Stanford versus Grenado matchup Thursday, December 19th, 11 a.m. kickoff there at AT&T Stadium.
Yep, Grenado has 0 title game appearances, so no state titles to their school, but they have 25 playoff appearances. Stanford, though, on the other hand, has 7 title game appearances, 5 state titles, and I believe a couple of those came by way of Coach Gordon Wood, who was the legendary coach for Brownwood Lions.
So here, this is where, and I'm big on picking things on points allowed. Grenado and Stanford both have allowed 155 points this year.
Dead nut.
Dead nut. So you got
on the points allowed now.
Yes. So you go back and you look at their average scoring. Grenado's 45.9 to Stanford's 47.1. And so that makes it very interesting for me. And very hard. It's very hard to pick one of these two teams. Stanford's averaging 275 yards on the ground. Grenado 158 on the ground. Grenado 203 yards in the air to Stanford's 160, and then total yards per game. Grenado 362 to Stanford's 436. So it's going to be a tight one. Rushing yards. Their leading rusher, Grenado's Logan Burrs, 108 yards per game to Kaysten Vega, 115 yards per game rushing. Passing wise, Bryce Ullman, 216 yards a game to Christian Durin's 150. So a little bit more balanced offense, I think, for Stanford in this football game. Grenado coming in the state finals. 14-1 to Stanford's perfect record, 15-0. Really looking forward to this and this matchup, and still don't know what way I'm going to go in the pick'ems whenever we get to that aspect of the show tonight.
Yeah, that one's going to be extremely hard. Just by the numbers, they're so dead even. Yeah. And that one's going to be tough.
Nah, it's going to be really, really tough. Moving up into 3A Division II.
But how tough is this next one going to be? Do you with your heart, or do you go by the numbers?
Trent, what was your record last year in the pick'ems?
What was it, 7-2? I can't remember. Seven and three. I don't even know.
7-3. I went 8-2.
Okay.
And the reason
just so that everybody's reminded.
Yes. And the reason why you went 8-7-3 was because you went off of your heart. Am I correct?
I went with North Shore on one. Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to clarify.
Yeah.
That.
That's a toss up. I mean, especially last year too.
No, it was, but
it's 50-50.
I still got to go with it because I still remember him saying that when we talked about it, we were going through the pick'ems on this, on that North Shore Duncanville game. And, he's like, I got to go this way anyway. Long story short, it was the difference in me beating him in the pick'ems. So here's the tell of tape. Here's where we're at. Wall falls to Gunter 42-32 to move on to the state championships. The big thing is for us, Woodville defeats Tidehaven 28-21 last Thursday for Woodville's first time in school history to make it to the state playoffs, state championship. And Trent, we did a realignment show back in February. Y'all could go back, scroll through. Don't ask me what episode number it was. But you can go back and find it. It's in February because the dates are stamped to it on Apple and Spotify. I know. Even TuneIn Radio. Go back and listen to that podcast. And Trent, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm 99.9% positive. Whenever we seen that Woodville went to 3A Division II, we talked about Woodville making a state title run.
Well, we knew that they were going to make a deep run. And I'd have to go back and listen to what exactly we said. And we might have said that Woodville had a very good shot of playing in this state championship game. We definitely knew that they were going to be playing at Thanksgiving, maybe after. Because we knew what talent they had. We thought that this was going to be the first time that Newton dropped the district championship in who knows how many years. But I would almost go as far to say is that out of all the state championship games, the Cinderella story of all of these teams is the Woodville Eagles.
Yes.
I mean, coming in, they weren't supposed to be here. They weren't even supposed to be in the regional final.
They're a two seed. Right?
Yeah, they're a two seed, a good two seed. We know that. But they were not supposed to be there. They were picked to not win those last two games that they've played.
Yep.
And here we are talking about them in the state championship game.
Unbelievable.
Well, you know, the three of us had a chance to see them this year And for a 3A Division II team with the athleticism on that team, you know, once they started to gel, you know, we saw them in a night where it was rainy, and saw Woodville. One of their losses was to Anahuac, but that they had five turnovers that night, and it just wasn't their night. But even with five turnovers, they still could have easily had won that ball game. But you know, it is a great story, and I am very interested to see how that game plays out on a big stage, because their athleticism is off the charts.
No, it really is. And that was a 29-20 loss that Woodville took to Anahuac early on in the season. And then
really early.
Yeah. And then behind that, I got to see them 2 weeks in a row, because then we hosted them in Cold Spring and they defeated Cold Spring 39-14. And I got to see them where field conditions were a little more favorable, weather-wise and everything else. But nonetheless, Woodville's first trip to the big show, and I'm super stoked for these guys. And they're stacked at the JV level as well. I just want to throw that out there now. Their JV football program, completely stacked. They are really, really good. Woodville's had 24 playoff appearances, and this is their first title game.
That was their first trip to the regional round. Was it the regional round or regional final round?
Regional
final. There's conflict. So it was their first trip to the regional final, and then it was their first trip to the semifinals. Now their first trip to the state championship game, where you go over to the Gunner side, and it's a completely different story. Five title game appearances, three state titles, and 34 playoff appearances. So it truly is a David versus Goliath here as far as story programs go, because Gunter has been there. They know what it takes. And this week is going to be – does the Cinderella story continue? That's the question.
Well, here's the deal. Woodville has allowed 210 points this season to Gunter's 215. But whenever you flip it over on the other side, Woodville averages 39.9 points per game, so right at 40 points, to Gunter's 43.9 points per
still
game.
Still close.
Still very, very close. And so whenever we get down to the pick'ems aspect of this game, it's going to be very interesting. See where we all go. I'm still not sold on what direction I'm going to go. Still a lot of thought process on here, and we're going to talk about that and more when we come back here on the 590 Sports Show. We're going to take a break. We come back, we're going to go 3A Division I all the way up to 6A, then get into our pick'ems. You're listening to the 590 Sports Show, powered by Texas Podcast Media. We'll be back right after this.
From custom processing, Professional Guide in Hunts, high tanning, and gator merchandise, Waters Processing and Alligator Farm offers a personal experience like no other. Locally owned and operated in Anahuac, Texas since 1987, Waters has been Southeast Texas' choice for any hunting adventure need. Now offering full-service processing of gator, deer, beef, hogs, and other wild game, make Waters Processing this hunting season's one-stop shop. Go to WatersProcessing.com or call 409-267-8413.
Bullfrog Environmental has 16 years of erosion control experience. From silt fence to construction entrances, we specialize in it all. Give us a call at 936-672-3744 or leap over and visit us on the web at bullfrogenvironmental.com. Welcome back to the 590 Sports Show. Craig Irwin, Trent Hart, Alex Outram down there in the Porter's Processing Swamp Box with Trent Hart. I'm up here in the Randy's Rubs Hot Box at the studios of 590 Sports and Texas Podcast Media. And give us a like, give us a share. Find us on social media, 590 Sports. Give us a like, give us a share over there. And don't forget our good friends over there at Anahuac Sports Live. And give them a follow and a like and all of that good stuff. So lots of good content here in Southeast Texas over there and on the 590 Sports page. And look, I want to throw a bone out there. Don't forget our friends over at SETX.com. go visit that website. If you want to get the lowdown dirty of Southeast Texas, that's where you go. Plenty of trash talking, great little form page over there to click on and be able to enjoy and learn a lot about Texas high school football in Southeast Texas. So go visit our friends over there. But guys, we talked about that Kilgore Lavergne game that we did Friday night. We rolled from there, talked from 1A up to 3A Division II. Now we're going into 3A Division I. And one familiar name in this state title football game, one name that we've talked about, if you've listened to the 590 Sports Show, we've talked about a good bit all year long. And I was pretty high on Columbus last year, and they ended up losing in the regional finals, I believe it was. But Paradise falls to Malakoff 27-19 in a tight football game. Malakoff moving on. Columbus just absolutely blows Edna out of the water at Rice Stadium, Rice University, Thursday night. 49-6 was the final in that football game to a Malakoff and a district runner-up Columbus to be set up in this state title football game.
Well, I don't think anybody – I know we didn't expect that Columbus would blow the doors off of Edna like the way that they did.
No.
I think last week we were talking that this might end up being a close ball game. Well, here we are wrong. But, you know, you're right. Columbus is a team that we have talked about almost every week, you know, because we've been keeping our eye on them. And I think towards the first of the, you know, when the preseason came out, when we knew Grayson Rigdon was going over there, we knew all what was going on with that team. We expected them to be here. I know I said that I expect them to be here. Now, whenever they dropped their district game to Hitchcock, I questioned it a little bit and, you know, made me rethink things a little bit. But I'm not at all surprised to see Columbus here in the title game.
No, I'm not either. I'm not surprised one bit to see them here. We knew that it was going to be a barn burner, or what we thought was going to be a barn burner between Hitchcock and Columbus, and it wasn't. Hitchcock won that game pretty handily overall. It's going to be interesting and good for Columbus to be here. And the biggest thing is Grayson Rigdon. This is his fourth state title football game to play in four seasons. Yeah.
Has an opportunity to win a fourth state title between three schools over the last four seasons, which is, that's just blows my mind. I don't know. I'm just wondering, has that happened before? Well, I'm sure that they'll talk about it.
Well, we're going to do a recap show next week, I'm sure. And when we do, that'll give us some time to verify if anybody else has ever been able to do that. But here's the deal. Columbus has allowed 363 points on the season to Malakoff's 160. Here's the flip side to it. Scoring averages, Columbus is averaging 52.7 points per game to Malakoff's 47. So you're looking at points allowed and then look at points scored. It's like Columbus is a little bit more high powered of an offense than what Malakoff is. Malakoff's averaging 276 yards on the ground and 176 yards in the air. Total yards per offense, 452 for this Malakoff football team. And then their leading rusher is Jason Tennyson, averaging 116 yards per game. Mike Jones, their quarterback, averaging 169 yards in the air. Their leading receiver is Parker Poteet, averaging 40.3 yards per game receiving. So kind of a tell of the tape for Malakoff. Don't have any stats on Columbus posted here online.
Yes. Had something to compare there.
No, I really do. I agree with you wholeheartedly. This is going to be another game that's going to be really hard to pick. Columbus coming into this one 14-1. Their one hiccup was to Hitchcock. Malakoff Tigers 15-0. One common opponent that these two teams had, just to think about as we roll into the pick'ems, is Madisonville. And Malakoff defeated Madisonville 28-29 was the final in that football game, to where Columbus beat Madisonville 62-35. So,
just to throw a wrench in that gear.
Yes.
Right. Because you look at the points allowed for Malakoff compared to Columbus's points allowed, but then you go down here to that common opponent,
right?
And you're like, huh?
Yeah. What do I do? It's tough. It really, really, really is. It's tough.
But Columbus is, this is their first title game appearance. It is Malakoff's second title game appearance. Both of them, Malakoff
won state title last year.
Is that correct?
Yep.
Won the state title last year. So they have one state title.
Yeah.
So that hasn't been updated yet. So anyway, I'm glad you said that, because I was like, that ain't right.
No, Malakoff won it last year, but let's jump up into 4A Division II. And now we're getting a little bit closer to where Alex really loves, to the bigger schools. Brock falls to Carthage last week, 45-17. La Vega defeats Wimberley 62-35 for a Carthage-La Vega matchup here Friday, 11 a.m. kickoff. And this is going to be a good one. Talking about, and I didn't even bring it up, but that 3A Division 1 game, that'll be a primetime game, 7 p.m. kickoff Thursday night.
Yeah, going over here to this Carthage game, and Carthage versus La Vega. By the numbers, another one that's kind of, makes you go back and forth. But points allowed for Carthage is 162 to La Vega's 316. Points for Carthage has scored 732 points to La Vega's 604, averaging for Carthage 48.8 to La Vega's 40.3. So, yeah, another one that's going to be scratching my head a little bit on.
Oh, Steve Grimilio, he just commented in there, points allowed for Columbus is deceiving because a lot of that scoring was garbage time. Columbus pulled starters in the third quarter in almost every game except the overtime game against Hitchcock.
That's a good point.
Very good point.
Yeah.
So, very good point.
Yeah, hearing those Carthage numbers, year after year, they seem just to churn out fantastic offensive football, and obviously the defense was on par this year as well. So that game is going to be a lot of fun. I know Trent and I throughout the season were looking at each other like, man, this Waco La Vega team, and sure enough, here they are in the state championship, and we'll save it for the selections, but this is one of those games that could get out of hand for one side rather than the other.
No, I agree with you. I know where you're going with that, Alex. I agree with you 1,000% on that. This game could get out of hand. Carthage's one loss this year was to Kilgore, and we just did a Kilgore game. We can understand that. Carthage had 5 turnovers in that football game. Definitely could get lopsided very quick between these two. So one thing I did not look at was common opponents, if there is any, for these two football teams, and there's no common opponents between the two. So they're at the 4A Division II level. 4A Division I, let's talk about this. Obviously, we talked about it when we opened the show up, but we're looking at a Salina-Kilgore matchup. That's going to be a 3 p.m. kickoff Friday afternoon, and going to be a really good football game. We kind of talked about these two. Kilgore's 13-2 coming into this. Salina is perfect on the season. Kilgore's points allowed 191. Salina's 248. Points for Kilgore 575. Salina 769. If you go down and you look at averaging, Kilgore averaging 38.3 points per game, Salina's 51.3. Whenever you look at it going through there, and that is really that's all that's there to compare these two on. You know, Kilgore lost a district game in a very tough district over there that they're in with Tyler Chapel Hill, Kilgore, West or Rusk, all of those guys. Very tough district over there. And every year you're talking about somebody out of that district competing for a state title, whether it was Tyler Chapel Hill, Kilgore now. Tyler Chapel Hill's been, you know, the key topic out of that district. But this is going to be a really good football game, guys.
I think it has the chance to be. Kilgore, you know, they've got two title game appearances, one state championship, 35 playoff appearances, to Salina's 11 title game appearances, 8 state championships, 46 playoff appearances. And it's funny because, I mean, Salina is one of those teams that I really didn't start hearing about until the later 90s when they really got things rolling there in Salina. And how their population exploded going into the 2000s. And it's, you know, now we talk about them as a storied program, especially since then, right? And you look at those numbers when that, you know, 11 state title game appearances and 8 championships, Kilgore's going to have their hands full.
No, I agree with you. They are going to have their hands full. I'm curious to see how they adjust. And Alex talked about them when we opened the show up, talking about the touch hogs that Salina has, the front four for five for Salina. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see, and definitely a game that I'm going to be glued to. But I went to that other website, and I'm going back and I'm looking, and it was about 94 was the turning point for Salina, and they went 11-1-1. 95, they made a state title appearance. 96, they went 11-1. 97, 11-3. 98, 14-2. 99, 2000, 2001, they were perfect. Then they kind of slumped off. 2005, they were perfect. 2007, they were perfect. And then 2015, they lost out in the state title game. And then kind of hit a lull up until 2021. They went 12-2, 11-2, and 11-2, and 12-0. Obviously, the 2024 season still being played. So kind of the history on Salina there as we talk about them. And to piggyback off of what you were talking about, Trent.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that it was around the mid to late 90s, somewhere in there, because I can remember playing Salina our senior year in the regional round of baseball.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, and that was 2A ball.
Way back when, yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing how some of these areas have grown, went from 2A and now they're playing 4A Division I. So yeah. Moving into 5A Division II. South Oak Cliff defeated Argyle 37-3 this last week. Richmond Randall all over Burney 42-7. So two absolute blowouts in the state semifinals. Burney was a runner-up going into that state semifinal game out of their District 13. Argyle was the winner of District number 3 there at 5A Division 2. But two blowouts, two teams going head-to-head with each other. South Oak Cliff just got some absolute dogs that they picked up from, I don't know, DeSoto, Duncanville, and everywhere else around Dallas. And Richmond Randall, been a pretty light schedule this year for Richmond Randall, in my opinion.
Oh, and that reflects in the numbers, too, right? Points allowed, 114, 779, 4. I mean, this game's kind of difficult if you're looking at just the stats,
correct?
The stat lines.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I have doubted Richmond Randall almost every week, and they, I mean, keep blowing out their opponents, and what a story that is. From out of Lamar Consolidated ISD, you know, South Oak Cliff, they've done it and done it and done it. This has the makings to be a special ball game.
No, it does. What's the tell of tape on these two as far as their history, Trent?
And bring it up. Let's see, Richmond. I should have already had it pulled up for you guys.
Yeah. Well, I guess I can feel it. Richmond Randall averaging 257.2 yards per game to South Oak Cliff's 200. Richmond Randall a little bit more passing on that aspect, though, 173 to South Oak Cliff's 146. And then total yards per game, Richmond Randall averaging 431 to South Oak Cliff's 347 whenever you look at it. Landon Williams Collis, the leading rusher for Richmond Randall, 133.5 yards per game. Malachi Trotter averaging 71.4 yards per game as a leading rusher for South Oak Cliff. But passing, Tyler Sark, I can't even pronounce that name, averaging 140 yards per game to Carter Kopsky, 137 yards. Say that again.
Kopecky,
137.9 yards per game. So it's pretty even there. whenever you look at those two as far as how it comes. No common opponents between these two football teams. Richmond Randall is 15-0, South Oak Cliff 13-2. But if you go back and you look at their losses, 1 to North Shore, 2 to Duncanville.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they schedules probably the toughest schedule in the state in regards to warm-up, quote-unquote, warm-up games for district play. I mean, you're playing up to 6A D1 football teams. And, you know, both games weren't necessarily close, but they weren't blowouts to where you say, oh, South Oak Cliff isn't in that category. No, they are in that category. And for the talent that they have, you know, putting up points and, you know, they're a good team. I mean, you cannot underestimate that team.
No, not at all. You cannot underestimate them, and they're just some absolute dogs over there. I'm really looking forward to this football game.
You know, I was trying to dig through some of these, but South Oak Cliff, I mean, 2 title game appearances, 2 championships, 36 playoff appearances. This is Richmond Randall's first state title game appearance, and I was trying – because they haven't been –
Yeah, I was going to say Richmond Randall is still fairly new. I want to say may at most 5 or 6 years in existence.
Yeah,
I'm showing 2021 was their first season.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that would be right. And they were in region 3, and at that time Port Neches Groves was in region 3 as well. And if you remember on this new district alignment, PNG, that whole district went to region 2, which cleared Richmond Randall away to get to the state title football game because they were getting tired of seeing that Purple Nation up there in Jerry's World.
Makes sense.
Sorry, had to get a drink. Moving into 5A Division 1. Highland Park defeated, who was that they played, Brian? 24-21. And then Angleton falls to Smithson Valley. Hard-fought game for Angleton, 21-14. Was the final there. First time in a long time Angleton's made that deep of a run, if ever, in the playoffs. And Coach Jason Britton doing a good job over there and getting Angleton to where they were. 21-14 final. Smithson Valley moves on. Highland Park versus Smithson Valley. These two football teams, Trent, what's the history on these two?
You're going to have to go through the stats on that. I'm still trying to bring it up.
Got you. Sounds good. Smithson Valley points allowed 175 to Highland Park's 246. Points for Highland Park 545 to Smithson Valley 652. And then you go back and you look and everything kind of averages out, if you will. Smithson Valley averaging 43.5 points per game. Highland Park 36.3 points per game. Here's the interesting thing. If you look at their overall records, Highland Park 14-1. Smithson Valley 13-2 coming into this football game. No common opponents between the two, and no stats posted whatsoever for any of these. Highland Park, one of their losses was to an out of state football team. So
yeah,
go ahead.
Highland Park is one of those teams that tends to reload. The Scots yes. have, you know, since the turn of the century, been very competitive, and their schedule, but you know, I think, you know, without stats, you can kind of take a look at the two schedules.
Yes.
And in my opinion, Highland Park has had the more tougher schedule than Smithson Valley. Once you start going down to San Antonio and into Corpus, South Texas, there's a ton of haves and have nots.
Right.
So, you know, Smithson Valley getting back to the state championship game. That's nothing to sneeze at, obviously. I watched the Angleton Smithson Valley game. Angleton had their chances. But Smithson Valley made the plays that needed to be made and was able to move on. You know, Highland Park and Denton Ryan was a fantastic ball game. Denton Ryan is a fantastic ball team in their own. Had you put Denton Ryan versus Smithson Valley or Angleton, I feel, you know, Denton Ryan could have beaten both of those teams.
Right.
But Highland Park is just a dynamite football team. And again, you know, this is going to be an interesting football game.
No, that so it is.
Four state title game appearances for Smithson Valley. No championships. But for the Scots, though, 9 title game appearances, 6 state championships.
Man, going to be interesting. I can't wait till we get down to the pick'ems aspect of this show, kind of see where everybody's at as we talk about it. Let's jump up into 6A, Division 2. Alex, I know you spent a lot of time in front of the TV this weekend, Saturday, watching high school football and flipping back and forth between games, so on and so forth. South Lake Carroll defeats Longview 20-17 was the final in that football game.
Yeah, and what a football game it was. You know, I don't know if you guys were able to see some of the replays or highlights from the ball game, but just watching it, I mean, it was haymaker after haymaker, two stout defenses, you know, offenses having to scratch and claw to put points on the board. Southlake Carroll has the ball with 3 seconds left, is attempting a 41-yard field goal to win the ball game, and the field goal is no good, but they call a running into the kicker penalty, which moves the ball up 5 more yards, and then the kicker gets another chance from 36 yards out and absolutely drills it right down the middle of the goalpost, and that's how Southlake Carroll wins it. Hats off to the Lobos. They played such a good football game. You know, seeing either one of these teams move on would have been fantastic. But, you know, that was one heck of a football game.
On the other side of that, Vandergriff defeats Summer Creek 34-31. Two tight football games coming out of the state semifinals for Vandergriff to move on to the state championship football game.
Yeah, that ball game, that ball game kept going back and forth. Summer Creek had the lead at the half. Immediately after halftime, Vandergriff took the lead. Back and forth they went in the second half. And again, hats off to Vandergriff. They made the plays that needed to be made and ended up sealing the deal with an interception late, I want to say with 9 seconds to go in the ball game, and that secured that win. You know, two very athletic football teams. I think out of the 4 teams that were left, Summer Creek was probably the most athletic team left, but Vandergriff was very coached up very well. And definitely was ready for it. They had been to the state semifinals, I believe, two out of the last 3 years, and hadn't made it. But they break through this year. So, if I'm not mistaken.
So I want to highlight a kid for Summer Creek, Brandon Jones, the free safety, a senior there, 10 pick sixes on the season. So
yes, he's also on the track team, which yes. that Summer Creek track team finished third in state this year.
Yeah, most definitely. I just wanted to bring Brandon up in the show. I've been meaning to talk about him, and it's just like the show just goes on forever, and the party never ends, right? But Brandon, I know his dad, Marcus, really well. He trains a lot of athletes down here in the Cleveland, Cold Spring. He works a lot with a lot of those athletes. Cousins with the one, Ivan Williams, that went on to play football for the great University of Texas, 2005 alumni, Ivan is. But just an outstanding kid. He's ranked 31 nationally, but number one locally in the state as a free safety. So wanted to bring Brandon up and just kind of mention him. Super stud, graduates this year. Not real big, though. 5'10", 175. Probably he's big enough to go play at the next level somewhere. Just probably not going to get that look to go play at a big school somewhere to watch him on Saturday afternoons, but definitely he's a good enough athlete to go play football at the next level. If not go play football, he could at least go run track. So
yeah, tail of the tape for South. Let's start with Austin Vandegrift first. Only one state title game appearance. It looks like their school hasn't been in surface for very long. 11 playoff appearances, 12 if you count this year. But to flip over to the South Lake Carroll Dragons.
History.
10 title game appearances, 8 state titles, 41 playoff appearances. And, man, I was looking at some of their, you know, I was trying to see if they had a point to where they turned a corner like Salina did. Because you didn't, when I was going through high school, I didn't really hear about them until the 2000s, and that's when they really got on a roll again. But it was even prior to that that South Lake Carroll was winning football. So
it was. Matter of fact, I believe Cold Spring lost to South Lake Carroll in the Astrodome in the early 90s in a state championship football game. Like I say, in the Astrodome, I believe it was 93. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's when it was. But you go back and look at it, Vandegrift allowing 217 points per game, or 217, but points for 640 to South Lake Carroll's points for 745, points allowed 328. Vandegrift averaging 42.7 points per game, South Lake Carroll 49.7 points per game. Talk about the ground and pound. South Lake Carroll, very balanced offensively, 203 yards on average per game on the ground, 254 in the air. If you look over at Vandegrift, rushing 162, passing 204, South Lake Carroll averaging 457 yards per game to 366 for Vandegrift. Leading rushers for both teams, Griffin Gorbeek, averaging 123 yards per game for Vandegrift, to Riley Wormley, 116 on the ground. Passing, Angelo Renata, 236 yards in the air for South Lake Carroll, to Miles Todecki, 201 yards. So they're kind of average yardage-wise for them two football teams, what you got to look at. And once again, even at this 6A Division II level, two complete different teams than what we're used to looking at when we're talking about state title contenders year in and year out, not having that DeSoto in the mix, right?
No, it is. I mean, DeSoto is we thought that they might be here, but turns out that they're not, and yeah. So be it. I'm perfectly content with that.
So here's what I didn't. Well, let's talk about this 6A Division I. North Crowley defeated Duncanville. And if you remember a couple weeks ago, I started talking about North Crowley a little bit and some videos that I've seen about North Crowley and the talk of them possibly being the one team to take down Duncanville. And they didn't do it in handily fashion, but they were able to do it. 36-34 was the final in that football game. North Crowley gets the win. On the other side to it, I've never seen this. Westlake defeats North Shore 35-10. Just that's not a football game. That's a beating right there.
Well, Alex, guys, you watched that game.
Yeah, got 35-10, and it really wasn't even that close.
Right.
The game plan that Westlake had coming into the ball game, they executed perfectly. The defense stayed sound. They stayed to their assignments. And I had never seen Caleb Bailey so flustered, the quarterback for North Shore. I mean, he started as a freshman, won a state championship as a freshman, and now a senior. And it was crazy to see Westlake just having their way. And not only defensively, but offensively as well. They were running RPOs, and it was like the Mustang defense hadn't seen it before. Completely outcoached North Shore, and what a job by the Chaparrals. They are back and they are for real.
I'm still kind of in shock over just looking at the score. I did not see that this year. And if you go back and you talk about it, go back to week one, week two, Trent, whenever we were talking about the 6A Division I level. You know, even those guys that get paid big money up there in the Dallas area that does podcast and live Facebook live feeds and all that stuff had North Shore winning this state title here at the 6A Division I level.
Well, and why wouldn't you, right?
Right.
I mean, North Shore has been in the state championship game every year since 2018.
Yeah.
Right? Winning three of those six. And everybody, I think, across the state was like, yeah, well, we're going to get a North Shore Duncanville rematch again this year. But we talked about it last week.
Yeah.
It's kind of a breath of fresh air getting two different teams in the 6A Division I championship game.
And just like you said, Trent, why wouldn't six D1 commits on that North Shore team? D1, I'm not talking about just college commits.
Right.
We're talking about D1 schools. We're talking about Denver Harris in the secondary for North Shore, who is committed to Ohio State. I want to say he's ranked fifth or sixth in the country. You know, you've got Caleb Bailey. You've got the wide receivers.
Quanell.
Committed to Colorado. You know, the running back was also committed, and there was another defensive player as well. And they didn't have it. And they from my vantage point watching on TV, I saw no adjustments to the game plan from the Mustangs. You know, they were trying to run what they've done all year long, and it just didn't work.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, to tell the tape between these two, North Crowley, points for 114 to points allowed 262 over there to Austin Westlake, 648 points for, points allowed 158. If you go down and look at their average scoring, North Crowley 54.3 points per game, Westlake 43.2 points per game. Rushing wise, North Crowley 50. These numbers aren't accurate.
They're not.
And
can't be.
Yeah, I'm not even going to run down them. The leading rusher for North Crowley, Cornelius Warren, the third, 116 yards per game to Grady Bartlett, 59 yards per game for Westlake.
I'm not sure that's right either.
I'm not sold on these stats.
I tell you what, watching North Crowley and Duncanville, that they're is not many teams in the state who can say that they had more athletes than Duncanville, and or North Shore, but North Crowley out-athleted Duncanville. The quarterback was absolutely phenomenal for North Crowley. Put the team on his back. They went to the half up 15-0. North Crowley on top of Duncanville. Duncanville went 14 unanswered to start the second half. And then North Crowley scored again. Duncanville scored again. And then North Crowley put up a couple touchdowns. And again, it was haymakers and haymakers, deep shots, long touchdown runs. Of course, you know, Duncanville wasn't going to go easily into the evening. And what a job by North Crowley to knock off, just an absolute stout Duncanville team with D1 commits. Believe the quarterback for Duncanville was going to Alabama, if I'm not mistaken. One of the top-ranked quarterbacks in the country. And, you know, credit to him. He did everything he could. You know, he had a lot, you know, teammates around him who didn't pick up their end of the bargain. But this is going to be a fun game.
It really is going to be fun. I'm super stoked looking into it. I know exactly where I'm going to be Saturday all day long. I do have one little deal that I have to go to, but as soon as that's over with, I'll be back home and be sitting in front of the TV, and Case and I'll be watching Texas high school football every evening and all day on Saturday, except for his little Christmas program that he's going to have. But when we come back here to the 590 Sports Show, we're going to pick our state title winners, who we think who is going to win each and every game, and we're going to let you join in on the contest. You're listening to the 590 Sports Show, powered by Texas Podcast Media. We'll be back right after this.
Howdy, folks. Randy here. At Randy's Rubs, it is our mission to bring you a variety of mouthwatering seasonings that are sure to make the ordinary extraordinary, to make the impossible possible. Creating memories with friends and family is what is most important to us, and we hope to be the cornerstone of your meals, making memories with the ones you love most. As all of you continue on your fall sports journey, Randy's Rubs wishes each of you an incredible season, and may each of you be an All-American. Go check us out on Amazon or at randysrubs.com. It don't suck, y'all.
From custom processing, professional guide in hunts, high tanning, and gator merchandise, Waters Processing and Alligator Farm offers a personal experience like no other. Locally owned and operated in Anahuac, Texas since 1987, Waters has been Southeast Texas' choice for any hunting adventure need. Now offering full-service processing of gator, deer, beef, hogs, and other wild game, make Waters Processing this hunting season's one-stop shop. Go to WatersProcessing.com or call 409-267-8413.
Welcome back to the 590 Sports Show. Craig Irwin, Trent Hart, Alex Outram here, there in the Porter's Processing Swamp Box. Craig Irwin in the Randy's Rubs Hot Box up here in the high rise of Cold Spring, Texas, in the studios of Texas Podcast Media. So, guys, we've had a heck of a show. State championship football games are upon us, finally. And we've been waiting 16 weeks for this. And it is here. We've talked pre-district. I mean, it's been a grind all year long, but it's been a great year of Texas high school football, and a lot to talk about as we've progressed on each and every week. And things, I mean, we've had some heartache, and we had some very prideful moments with our teams collectively throughout the season. And, you know, some of y'all got let down a lot harder than others. Not going to mention anybody's names, but they may be on this podcast, with the regular season and how their, home team performed. But, Trent got a taste of what I have been feeling over the last couple of years over in Cold Spring. So, I'll take that jab at myself, and, but yet Cold Spring able to, make the playoffs this year in a very short run as they fell to Teague. But, We are in the heart of state championship football, and we've talked about all of the matches that are upcoming, and we're going to start at 1A. We're going to work our way up to 6A, and we're going to pick winners of each and every one of these state title games. And with that being said, we're going to throw this on the Facebook page. You can chime in on the pick'ems for some Randy's Rub seasoning. You can chime in on the pick'ems there on the 599 Sports page. You're going to have to be done by Wednesday morning.
Morning. Yeah. Like by what, 9 o'clock?
9 a.m. Wednesday morning, you have to have your picks in for the pick'ems to qualify for the contest. So
you have to put in your scores.
Yes.
Don't forget to put in your score. Like tonight, we're only going to do our winners because we're not technically in the contest. But remember to put in your scores because that is what's going to end up breaking the tie if there is one. So just keep that in mind.
Keep that in mind. It's going to be a lot of fun. Last year, Terry Mills from actually local here in Cold Spring won the contest here on the 599 Sports page. He was the one who won it, got him some Randy's Rubs, some shirts and all that good stuff, some swag. But this year, I hope it's somebody different. You know, with the pick'ems, I know Ray Parkinson's going to be chiming in on this deal. He had a pretty successful season during the regular season in the pick'ems. So let's start off. Six-man, 1A, Division II, Jayton versus Oakwood. Trent?
Jayton Jaybirds, 14-0 versus Oakwood Panthers, 9-5. I'm not necessarily going with sentiment here. I think I'm dead set on going with the Jaybirds.
Alex?
I am also going with Jayton as well.
Well, that's going to be a clean sweep on our part. I'm going with Jayton as well. They have put together they've only allowed 208 points over the season, and they've been averaging 65.5 points per game. So I have to go with Jayton as well for my pick in the 1A Division II championship game. Next game, Whiteface versus Gordon.
Whiteface versus Gordon. I mean, both teams are 14-0. I'm not going to pick against the defending state champions. I'm going with Gordon.
Yeah, I'm going Gordon as well. Points allowed on the season, 84. The hiccup here is the 10-point differential I have between the two, Whiteface versus Gordon. Whiteface averaging 67.4 points per game. Gordon's 57 points per game. I'm going off of the defensive aspect in this deal, and I think Gordon's going to win the state title.
I am going with Whiteface.
Going opposite.
I like it. A little. What? Let me ask you this. What made you go the other way? Just to be different?
Yes, 100%.
Okay. We'll go with that.
On that particular one.
Okay.
On that particular one.
Shiner Comanches versus the Munster Hornets. This is 2A Division II. Comanches 12-3. Hornets 13-2. I'll start this one. I'm going with Shiner.
Okay.
Alex? I'm going with Munster.
I am also going with Munster.
All right. I like a little difference here. And Munster's been averaging 50.3 points per game. Shiner's 37.6. But points allowed, 179 to 231. I think Shiner's defense is going to be hold them into that. And that's the direction I'm going in that 2A Division II. And they knocked off Bremont. And I know what kind of a football team Bremont was. So that's why another reason why I went that one. Stanford versus Grenado. This one ought to be a good one.
I can start this one. I'm going with Grenado.
Going with Grenado, 14-1 on the season. Stanford 15-0, and this is that one where both teams 155 points allowed on both teams. Stanford,
what is it? 688, 707.
Yeah, real close. I'm going Stanford in this one.
As much as I don't want them to win it for personal reasons, I'm going to go with Stanford.
Going Stanford. So very here's going to be a good one. So, yeah, I think Stanford's going to win this one. Then win that one. Here's the next one. 3 p.m. kickoff. Gunter versus Woodville. Woodville 13-2. Gunter 13-2. Alex.
Oh.
I'm going with Gunter.
Going with Gunter. Trent, you going off a heart or are you going off? What do you, I mean, if you look at it, Woodville's points allowed 210 to Gunter's 215. Points for 598, 659. Woodville 39.9 to Gunter's 43.9.
I mean, by the numbers, it's not that much different, right? But Gunter has been ranked all season long. I mean, all season long. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Woodville. And I, as much as I want to pick Woodville, and I truly hope that they can pull it off, I can't. I'm going to go with Gunter as well.
Well, look, I'm going Gunter as well, and the reason being is every time that I pick Cold Spring to win in the Pick'ems during the regular season, they lost. So I'm going with Gunter, hoping Woodville's going to do that to me, and Woodville will really pull out the win because I am rooting for the Woodville Eagles, and they're going to be even better next year. So with that being said, I'm going Gunter with the inside, the heart of me is wanting Woodville to win that one. 3A Division One, Columbus 14-1, Malakoff 15-0. I'll start this one. I'm going Columbus. They've allowed more points, but they're averaging 52.7 points per game. I think they've peaked at the right time. Points for 790 to Malakoff 717. I feel like that Columbus is going to win their state title here.
Yeah.
I'm also going with Columbus. Watching this team grow the last few years to where they're at now, I believe it's their time.
I'm glad he said that because I've been saying it that this was Columbus's year for a while, and I'm not going to sway from that, so I'm also going to go Columbus.
Let's jump 4A Division 2. I think I already know which way everybody's going in this. Carthage Bulldogs versus the La Vega Pirates. Carthage 14-1, La Vega 12-3. I'll start it. I can't pick against Carthage.
Neither can I.
I'm with you. Carthage as well.
It's a clean sweep all the way across the board for the three of us. And, I mean, you just look at the numbers, and Carthage's numbers are way better than what Waco La Vega's is. And, you know, it's hard. Anybody who picks against Carthage, I'm questioning their sanity. Here's going to be a good one. Salina versus Kilgore. Kilgore's 13-2. Salina's perfect on the season. You go down and you look at it. Salina's outscored or averages 51.3 points per game. Trent, who are you going with?
Even though we got a good look at Kilgore and I like their defense a lot, it's going to be a real good matchup to see this really good defense go against a really good offense. But I'm going with Salina here.
Alex?
As am I.
You're going Salina. I'm going the opposite way. I'm going Kilgore in this one. I think that their defense is going to really shine this week. They played really well last week. Overall, with the weather being an issue as well, I wish we had overall stats to go off of these two other than knowing what we know about Kilgore. And I wish there was just more to read in that game, but I'm going with Kilgore in the upset overall in that football game. Moving into 5A Division II, South Oak Cliff versus Richmond Randall. Alex, Richmond Randall's 15-0, South Oak Cliff 13-2. What direction are you going?
I am going to continue my trend and say that Richmond Randall will not come out the victor, I will be taking South Oak Cliff.
I'm going South Oak Cliff as well, even though the numbers look better for Richmond Randall. Points allowed 114 to points allowed for South Oak Cliff 168. Richmond Randall averaging 51.9 points per game to South Oak Cliff's 39.6. I think South Oak Cliff has had the strength of schedule to that solidifies those lower numbers. South Oak Cliff's going to get the win right here.
I think you're right. I mean, I think it's the just strength of schedule that we see between these two teams. And I think South Oak Cliff is on a mission from dropping to PNG in the state title game last year. And, you know, there's a lot of animosity, you know, from the controversy that came out of that game, right?
Right.
With the penalty and all that, and that they think that that cost them the game. And it may not have. That's in the past, right? They're looking toward the future. And I think they're going to pull this one off this week and get that state title win.
Agreed. 5A Division I. Smithson Valley Rangers 13-2, Highland Park Scots 14-1. Trent, I'm going to let you start this one.
You know, I don't know a whole lot about these two teams. I had to really listen to what you guys were talking about earlier when we were previewing this game. I think I'm going to go Highland Park here.
Alex?
I'm going Highland Park.
Yeah, I'm going Highland Park as well. They're ranked 16th in the state overall. I'm going with them. Their numbers don't look as good as what Smithson Valley's does, but I feel like that Highland Park had a little tougher schedule overall than what Smithson Valley had, and I think that right there is going to be the big difference there at this 5A Division I matchup, and I'm going to go with Smithson Valley in this one. Jumping up into 6A Division II, Southlake Carroll versus Vandergriff. Vandergriff Vipers 14-1, Southlake Carroll Dragons 15-0. I'll start this one. I'm going with history. I'm going with Southlake Carroll.
I'm with you there. I'm also going Southlake Carroll.
As am I.
Yeah. I figured that was going to go that way, but when we go over to the 6A Division I, I feel like that we may get a little bit different out of this one. North Crowley, and may not. North Crowley versus the Westlake Chaparrales. North Crowley Panthers 15-0, Chaparrales 14-1.
Yeah, this one's kind of tough for me. But I'm a believer in the hype. I'm going North Crowley.
I'm going North Crowley as well in this one. I think they're just a little more gangster than what Austin Westlake is, and I'm going to go with North Crowley. Now, you've seen that Westlake football team. Excuse me, guys. My dang allergies got me. I got to go with North Crowley in this one as well.
What do you got, Alex?
We are all in agreement on this ballgame.
Wow.
Very
wow,
interesting.
I thought for a second there that Alex might go Westlake.
I kind of thought he would as well.
Had I have not taken the time to watch the Crowley Duncanville game, I may have gone Westlake, but I am a believer in North Crowley.
So Trent, how many did we pick unanimous across the board?
Unanimously?
Yeah.
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. I wish I had them side by side because they're on a different sheet now.
Don't worry about it then.
There was quite a few that we picked unanimously. There was about three, maybe four that we didn't.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious, kind of overall how it was, but it's okay. And looking back now, we picked everything but six man last year. We did not do the six man, so we added six man into this year. No, we didn't, because I went 7-3. That was 10 games, 8-2. That was 10 games, and we got 12 with the 1A. But that still, nonetheless, it's good to throw it in there, make people do some research and get a little deeper on this Texas high school football following. But that's going to be a wrap for us on the 590 Sports Show. Looking forward to the state playoffs, the state championship games this week, guys. As I know where I will be glued to. and be looking forward to watching all these games, as I'll have one of my monitors pulled up and being able to watch some of these football games throughout the week, starting Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And a good thing they start kind of midday. That way I can get everything done in the morning and then sit around and watch football after that. But totally looking forward to this week of Texas high school football, and looking forward to everybody chiming in on the 590 Sports page with their pick'ems. So looking forward to all of that, and this podcast be dropping for those of y'all that are watching the Facebook Live. We will have it on. We'll drop this podcast. It'll be actually up tonight, guys.
Ray Parkinson wanted to make sure that he said hello to everybody.
Hello,
okay,
Ray.
Everybody. All I heard was Craig, so I thought I was chopped liver.
Well, you know, you are. You are, Trent. So it was a great time hanging out with y'all Friday night before and after the game. Great, great photo op there at Gringo's there next to Randall Reed Stadium in New Caney. And then hitting OB-Dubs up afterwards after the game. Not sponsored by either one of them, but some great fellowship there talking high school football and life in general with Ray and Alex Trent. And Trent had the wife and the daughter with him as well. So it was great hanging out with my extended family this past weekend covering Texas high school football. That's going to be a wrap for us on the 590 Sports Show. For Alex Outram, Trent Hart, I'm Craig Irwin. We will see you at the game.